This is the Mickey Miles and More podcast, your one stop for information on Disney races, Disney vacations, Disney theme parks, and more. Now, here are your hosts for the Mickey Miles and More podcast, Michelle Scribner-McLean, Chris Eliopoulos, and Mike Scopa.
Welcome home, Milers, and welcome back to another episode of Mickey Miles and More, a podcast where three friends and another friend talk about their passion for the Disney parks. I'm Chris Eliopoulos. With me, as always, is Dr. Michelle Scribner-McLean. Hi, Michelle.
Hello, Christopher. How are you?
I'm doing well.
Go
ahead. Just bring it on.
No, I was just going to say, you know, I like gadgets. I know you like gadgets, too.
Tell me about the
we do talk about running on the show, so I'm going to tell you the gadget I got yesterday, which is a Theragun. My PT recommended it, and it is like a percussive, like, massage thing, and oh my God, all I need is, like, a Cosmo and my Theragun and a good book. I'm set for the night. It is, like, unbelievable for runners. And
Using it to hit Mike over the head?
It's amazing. It's amazing. So runners, it's really, really, really cool. So it's interesting. Yeah. So anyway, runners, get that. So I give a shout out to my Theragun.
All right. And of course,
what's
like I said,
with you?
Nothing. I'm ready to move. We have to get through this whole thing because, you know, Mike is on his 30 minute or less kick. So speak of the devil.
Mike has like 8 pages of show notes here. So.
I know. 8 pages of notes for a half hour. So Mike, how's everything going? Mike Scope is with us.
Well, I'm actually going to add a little bit to the notes. I actually have a shout out. I don't give out too many shout outs, but I need to give a shout out to my friend Nina Epps, who, it's a colleague of mine way back, like 30 years ago, Nina, I think it was, or 40 years ago. Anyway, she is a big Disney fan, and she and I have been texting over the last 2 weeks, and she's been sending me a lot of really good information. So I just want to give a shout out to Nina, and I hope to see her in a week or two.
Oh, very nice. Well, speaking of friends, we've got our champion returning player.
Thank you, Nina.
Returning player from MEI and Mouse Fan Travel, our good friend, Becky Menken. How are we doing, Becky?
I am doing fantastic because I'm not sitting in my house right now.
Tell everybody where you are.
After 420 days of being what felt like house arrest, I am sitting in the Riviera Resort at Walt Disney World, and I cannot be happier to have been on a plane, fully vaccinated, ready to get back to the magic, to experience all the things that I've missed so much and that, frankly, I took for granted that I got to see as much as I did. And now I'm just happy to be back, happy to see friends, happy to return to the magic.
Nice. Yeah, I'm the one who likes to stay home. You're the one who travels a lot during the year as a travel agent. So I'm sure this was torture for you, where for me, it's been heaven to be home, not seeing anyone and not being bothered. So on today's episode, we're going to first mention just a little bit of housekeeping in that the buses from the TTC to the Magic Kingdom are gone for now. So if you're going down to the parks and you're parking at the TTC, just be aware that you're not going to be able to get buses. So, but really why we're talking to Becky today is because she's finally experiencing what it's like to be down there. And as a travel agent, I'm sure it's been pretty hard, Becky, to explain to your clients what to expect down there. And now that you're down there, you're getting a little bit of the feeling of what goes on. So far, you've been to that other park complex, Universal, something like that. I think that's the name.
Yes, Universal Studios Orlando. I will give you the correct pronunciation of that.
And you've been to Downtown Disney so far. We haven't been to the parks. But I think it's good because hopefully we'll talk to you again in a week or two, maybe after you get home, and sort of you can give us the rundown. But how is the flight out and down into Orlando Airport? How did you, other than feeling great, How did you feel with the protocols? Did you feel safe? Were people polite? Were people following the rules? What were the rules?
Yeah, I was leaving from Seattle. So Seattle does tend to have a very conservative attitude when it comes to COVID. So everybody's masked up. Everybody's keeping 6 feet apart from each other. There's a feeling of respect for each other, which I really appreciated, especially returning for the first time to mass crowds of people. And the airport was very busy. It had just come off of our spring break. So things had kind of settled down, but it was one of the busiest days that SeaTac Airport had had since the shutdown. I was intrigued because, you know, when you travel as much as I do, you've got a down pat. It's like a science in the back of your head. You have to go to this door and you have to go to this to do this and you have to go to this line. And it's second nature. But for me, not having traveled for 420 some odd days, everything seemed new because I wasn't sure what door I could walk in or which door I should walk in or should I be in this line? Is there a different protocol to going through the motions of, you know, the routine of getting on a plane? And luckily, it didn't change too much, but I was hyper aware. I was aware of the markings on the floor. I was aware of the people around me, and even the boarding routine, because I know that over time that has changed from front to back and then from back to front. And so you kind of really have to pay attention rather just being on autopilot, which once I got here, the attitudes and the some of the restrictions that we have observed in the Seattle area aren't as strict here. So that took me aback a little bit because there weren't as many markings on the floor. There weren't as many of the protocol that I had just seen 5 hours earlier in MCO. So it changes depending on where you are in the country, what protocols are in place, what rules and regulations are in place. So if you're traveling, you might take your attitude from where you are and find that you land in a completely foreign area because things are being done differently. Like here in Florida, pretty much everything is open off property, obviously, because Disney and Universal Studios both have their own rules and regulations outside of what Florida as a whole has put in for their regulations and their protocol. So I have been to a couple of restaurants that are off property, and it's a little bit different than home, where we're still at 50% capacity. And as a matter of fact, they were looking at rolling it back to 25 because we had a spike in the Seattle area. But here it's on property, it's 50% still. Off property in some areas, it's 100% in the restaurants. So it really depends.
With barriers, Becky, with barriers between people or?
Nope.
Just a regular, just pre-COVID looking.
Yeah, pre-COVID looking.
And what about servers wearing masks?
Yes, servers have been wearing masks everywhere that I've been. Let me distinguish that on property at Universal and what I've seen here so far, they have distance tables. So it's not like you have one table next to another table next to another table. However, when I was off property, I did observe that. So again, it really depends on the business that you're going into. But if you stay on Disney property or you stay at Universal, as of today, as of this recording, there's still distancing, masks on all servers. And of course, they require you to wear a mask if you're walking through the restaurant. But if you're sitting down actively eating or drinking, you can remove your mask. But if you have to get up to go to the restroom, you have to put your mask back on. So I think the interesting part is since I've been here, the first few days at both locations, both at Disney Springs and at Universal, they were still taking temperatures. And it was just today that we found, or yesterday, that they said Universal dropped the temperature requirement and Disney will be dropping the temperature requirement. So
oh, wow.
I think that we're in this position now that things are changing so fast that we could say here is what you can expect today. Right. But tomorrow it might be completely different. So you really have to pay attention to what's happening at the destination that you're traveling to.
So I'm sorry. Let me just ask this one because this was a big question for Michelle, and I'm going to ask it for her unless she wants to ask it. When you go down to Disney, you tend to rent a car.
Yes.
Michelle's had some issues lately looking to rent and the costs of them. Any issues that you want to discuss about the rental cars down there? Yeah,
the rental car situation is a big problem worldwide. This is not something that's happening in Florida. It's happening in any location that got caught off guard in a vacation location. So Florida, I was lucky. I actually didn't have a problem finding a car. I went through Avis. I picked up, not at the airport though, I picked up at the hotel. And I got a great rate. I think I got one of the better rates that I've had in a while. For 13 days for a intermediate SUV, just around $420. So,
wow.
Yeah.
So I'm going to Austin for 5 days and I'm paying $600.
Exactly. And it totally depends on the market. So some markets here in Florida, they still had some demand. So they kept a lot of their inventory. What happened is the car rental companies dropped and sold inventory in some of those areas that they didn't have demand. So Hawaii right now is a mess if you want to get a rental car, because they sold all their inventory and it's not like they can just go and easily get replacements for them. That's why you're seeing even car rental sales right now, or car sales is so difficult to get a car, that the used car market, they're having a hard time even finding used cars. So I think this is going to be with us for a while, and you should think about things like town car companies to get you around, Lyft and Uber, any other transportation options, because in some markets, you're going to have a hard time getting a car for under, I've seen them as high right now as $1,500 a day, per day.
Wow.
But I know Chris doesn't rent, so the car services are reasonable in Orlando?
Yeah, well, they're the same as they've always been. For example, I tested a new company when I came in, which is why I didn't pick up the rental car at the, or I picked up the rental car at the hotel instead of the airport. And the three or four companies that we use, and I happen to like this one a lot, they're really reasonable, somewhere between $75 and $100 for a one-way trip. But that's up to four or five or six people, depending on the type of vehicle you get. So if you're paying per person on a shuttle, you're going to get there pretty quickly to just get a town car or somebody to come get you. Plus, you don't have the hassle. Some guy shows up and he's there to help you with your luggage. They lead you right out to the car. They drop you off at your hotel. And unlike Magical Express, which is clearly going away soon, you don't stop at six different places. You're not shoved in with a whole bunch of other people. It's you and the car. And by the way, the car services are the same. They're wearing masks. They have hand sanitizer in the back seat. They are very safe and watching protocols as well.
But Chris needs to make those reservations now.
I was literally going to say, Becky, speaking of which.
Yeah. Send me your air, Chris. I'll take care of your car.
See what how easy is that? You would use a travel planner when you just, here's my numbers, go get it for me. So,
yep.
All right, go ahead, guys. What's your next?
So one of the things I wanted to mention is that in the past, and Becky, I noticed that you were getting a larger vehicle. Mm-hmm. In the past, sometimes renting an SUV was less expensive than renting an economy car. And I'm wondering, yes, if that's what you're seeing down there. And that's number one. Number two, what I have seen and heard is that there are some people who have gone down and who have decided they're going to go over to the local U-Haul and rent a van for $19 to $24 a day, and they're going to use that for their car when they're down there. So I just wanted to make those two points, but I'm very curious to see if you noticed that the larger cars are not as expensive as the economy and the compact cars.
Yeah, and that's a really good question, and it is all supply and demand. So this is something that is pre-COVID is an issue, or not an issue, it's a good thing, actually. You just have to be observant when you're renting a car. And so many people just hop in and think that the lowest economy is going to be the cheapest. They grab it and then figure out that if they would have just scrolled down a little bit farther or looked at other options or other rental car companies, right, you can get a intermediate SUV for lower because they may have more of them available, yeah, and the economies just aren't there. So it's priced on supply and demand. So always, always look at all the options and don't be in a hurry when you're booking any component, which is what good travel professionals do, is make sure that you've got the best deal and the best situation for that deal. Happens with the hotels too, and cruise ships for that matter. You might sometimes, not unfortunately not Disney, but on other cruise lines, you might see that an ocean view is actually more expensive than a balcony sometimes because there are more balconies available.
Hmm. So Becky, how do you, if somebody is going to book with you and your agents, how do your agents prepare to give them advice if things are changing so rapidly and everything's so fluid? You know, if you had a family of four who wanted to go in a month and you were going to, you know, train your agent to give them the best information, what do they do, or what do you do?
Luckily, we have a lot of resources, and in the travel industry, when you have a consortia like we do, they give us access to databases with a lot of info. So for example, I have a client that is going to go to Australia when it opens, but he wanted to know if they decided to go to some other locations in on the way, what the protocol was and what the rules were and the regulations. And we have a tool that allows us to put in the itinerary, and actually it'll spit out all of the rules and regulations and things that you need to do to enter a country or enter a location, all in one email that I can email out. And all the protocols are changing quickly. And that also is not just international, it's also within the United States. So if I plugged in Florida, it will tell me exactly what is required in those locations. So luckily we have resources that we can share. So that's the training, is basically you don't assume that what the protocol is today will be the same tomorrow. You have to look it up again and look it up again and look it up again and keep preparing people. A good example of that right now is one of the very first cruises that's going to be sailing is a Royal Caribbean ship out of the Bahamas on June 12th, which I'm sailing on, by the way, and I'm so excited. But yeah, I know, Chris, the Bahamas has changed their requirements a couple of times during this waiting period between booking and now. So every few days I go in there and check what the latest information is. For example, they required everybody to get a certain test 5 days before you actually travel to the location. And that means a lot of timing. You have to actually make sure that you take it and get the results back before you travel and still stay within in that 5 days. But just a few days ago, the Bahamas decided that if you can prove that you're vaccinated, you don't have to go through the testing process. So that took away a lot of the inconvenience of traveling to the Bahamas. So right now it's just extremely complicated because every country is different, every state is different, every destination is different, and they're all changing simultaneously.
Darn right. So you've stayed for a couple of days at Universal. Mm-hmm. Is this your first night staying at Riviera?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. I just checked in today. Went to Disney Springs to mm-hmm. have dinner there, or sorry, to have lunch there and kind of walk around and take it all in. Right. But have not been to a park yet.
Okay. I figured we'd talk about it a little bit. How did you feel at the hotels? Is it comfortable? Is it awkward? You know, what's going on with like house cleaning and housekeeping and things like that? Like, is it a little bit weird? Because I'm sure you're just going in there going, what's changed? What's the same?
Well, I will be completely honest. You know me, I'm going to be fully transparent. Universal did things a little bit differently, and I liked it. Basically, when I arrived, there's no valet. There's no valet here at Disney, and there's no valet over at Universal. However, that is changing in a few days or weeks. But when I arrived, I parked my car, I got my luggage out, I walked it up. When I entered the hotel, there was a station and there was a lot of signage to tell you, this is the door you go in, that's the door you go out. You go in the door and there's a security guard there ready to take your temperature. They take your temperature and then they give you a wristband so that it shows that you have been checked that day and you can freely move about the hotel without an issue if because your temperature was checked. All of the check-in desks had plexiglass, so you were distant from them. If somebody came in the line behind you too close, there was a cast member who would stop you and say, I'm sorry, could you make sure to give 6 feet? I mean, it was very, very organized. The elevator, they wanted only the one traveling party together in the elevator at any given time. So there was signage on the elevators that says only one traveling party in the elevator at any time. So I felt very comfortable. I felt that the cast over there was making sure that people were adhering to the rules. The rules were posted everywhere. There was no question, which was nice. And one thing I really liked on housekeeping, and also their club levels were open, so there's a couple of things here. Housekeeping, they didn't come into your room. There's actually zero housekeeping. But if you need towels, you need coffee, you need garbage pickup, you had a text number that you could text and say, could you bring me more coffee? And then they would bring it up, hook it on your door or put it outside your door and knock on the door and leave. If you wanted towels, it would do the same thing. Or you put garbage outside the door. So you never had contact with somebody, which was really cool. And it was fast. I asked for extra coffee at one point and it took less than 5 minutes to get a whole thing of coffee delivered to me. In their club levels, which used to be like a buffet style setup for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, instead of having buffet set out, you would walk into the club and they would have on display the different choices. And you would say, yeah, I want some mac and cheese and I'd like a chicken satay. And they would then put it in individual to-go containers for you and give it to you so you could take it back to your room. So it was really well done. I felt safe. I felt comfortable. When I checked in here at the Riviera, it was different. There was no temperature check when I got here. However, there were cast members there with shields, mask shields, and face masks. And you have, of course, remote check-in, so you don't even have to talk to somebody. That was very comfortable. And on housekeeping here, you can turn down housekeeping altogether, which is what I did. Or you could have every other day what they call light housekeeping, which means they come in, they do the trash, take the towels, and that's it.
Oh, I like that. That's a nice little.
I wish they had the text here. I tried that to see if, because there is a text chat for questions here on property, but it's not specific to the hotel. So okay. That's the only thing I think Disney could have done a little better.
Okay. So Mike and I have been having this conversation about the restaurant reservations and the park reservations. You and I spoke a little bit offline about this. The big question we were having is park hopping and dining reservations. And so here's the theoretical one. And here's the funny part. By the time this even comes out, it might change because Disney is changing constantly. So like, just take it with a grain of salt, everyone. You've signed up for your park. It is Epcot. For dinner at 7 o'clock, you've decided you want to go to Via Napoli. You've made that reservation. 2 o'clock, you and the family decide, I want to go over to Hollywood Studios and walk around Batu or whatever you want to do. 6:30, you make your way back to Epcot. They are now at capacity. What do you do? And Mike had sent a note to Disney asking this specific question, and they were very kind of generalized with their answer because obviously they're going to cover their butts because it's changing from moment to moment. But basically, their answer was having a dining reservation doesn't guarantee you entrance to the parks. So if you do have a problem, contact customer service or whatever the people are.
Right.
And see if you can get in. Can you get back in to that park that you have a reservation if you are able to?
With the full caveat that things are constantly changing.
Yep.
It's my understanding that as long as you had that park reservation in that park, you could return to that park. Mm-hmm. That's been what we've been told. Now, of course, something could have changed along the way. However, I know that they have been saying that if the park is at capacity, you can't go in there if you've got a dining reservation. But let's say that you made a reservation in Hollywood Studios at Brown Derby, right? But your reservation was actually in Epcot, and you park hopped to Hollywood Studios and it's full because you didn't have the park reservation there. You would not be able to go in to Brown Derby. That's where that comes into play. Not so our advice to everybody has been, please be sure to make your dining reservations in the park that you have a reservation for. So that is my understanding. That's what we've been told. Again, it has been changing. So at this point, I could be out of date.
I will let Mike read to you their answer just in case you wanted to hear it. Mike, what was their answer to that question or the response?
So rather than read the whole thing, there is one line that sort of validates what Becky's saying. And it says, we recommend guests book in-park dining and other experiences at the park where they have a Disney park pass reservation, which means
what we said.
Not the park you're going to hop to. So I think what that kind of to me says what Becky's saying and what you're saying, Chris. So you have a park reservation for Epcot tomorrow. You have a dinner reservation for Via Napoli at 7. At 2 o'clock, you go over to Disney Hollywood Studios. You come back at 6 o'clock. Your park reservation, and Becky, correct me if I'm wrong, your park reservation is good for the entire day.
That is my understanding.
That is my understanding too, from whatever to closing. So I think that's the answer, Chris.
Okay.
I do think though that if you left Epcot and you had a reservation at say give me a restaurant Mama Melrose in DHS and that was at 7 o'clock and the park was at capacity, then that's where the fun begins. And the response that I had was a little, it was irritating because it says, dining cast members will be happy to discuss your situation.
Right. And that's where that comes into play, where they say, if you don't have a park reservation there, a dining reservation is not going to guarantee you entrance into the park.
Right. But if you had already made the reservation and the park is at capacity, then obviously you can't get in.
Right. So when you opt to.
It should be a no-brainer that you can cancel. Because you had
losing your deposit.
Right. Because you had no idea within 24 hours that the park was going to be full.
Well, that's why they're telling you that make the dining reservation in the park you have a reservation in.
Right.
They're basically saying they can't guarantee that. They still won't charge you. They're trying to be nice and saying, we'll try to do our best for you, but they're covering their
And that makes total sense. If you think about it, they're telling you to make sure you make a dining reservation in the park that you have a reservation for, so you don't run into that situation. So
you can still park hop,
Yeah, you can still park up, leave, and come back is what my understanding is. And I'll dig a little deeper, and if I find out that there's something different, I'll make sure to update you.
One last question before we move on to something else, but I just wanted to ask, I was under the impression that you could only park hop to one other park in a day, and is that not true? I know it's changing. I know.
I know. I was told, yes, that it was supposed to be one other park, but I've also heard that you can park to multiple parks. So I don't know how I don't know how they could possibly tell, because you don't have a park reservation to go to the park you're hopping to. And they're certainly not, if you have a park hopper ticket, are they tracking that? I've heard it both directions. So that's another one that I'll see if I can actually get a real answer to.
Okay. So the CDC has just informed us that cruising in the United States waters will start coming back by mid-July, but they're going to have a 98% of the crew and 95% of guests proving that they are vaccinated, meaning they're probably going to you're going to have to get on a cruise. You're going to have your vaccination card. Back, what's the Disney Cruise Line info that
Well, There's actually two sides to this story. Ooh. There are two paths. The CDC has allowed for two paths to return to cruising. The first one is the one you just said, that they require 98% of the crew and 95% of the passengers to be fully vaccinated in order for a cruise line to start sailing immediately. Okay. So for some of the cruise lines, now that people or kids 12 and up can now be vaccinated, most of the cruise line, that 5% is usually those kids between 1 and 11. So that's going to fit most cruise lines. That's pathway number one. Pathway number two doesn't require that level of vaccination, but they require a cruise line to do what they're calling the test cruises. So they have to go through all of the hoops to be okay to sail. So if you're not going to go with the vaccination route, then you have to go through the test cruising. There is a, I believe there's a requirement of vaccination, but it's not 98%. So it would allow Disney to return with the kids, with the level of kids. But that cruise line has to go through a test phase for every single one of their ships, meaning they have to test with passengers, which could be the employees of the cruise line. It could be travel agents. It could be volunteers. It could be whoever the cruise line deems is are the volunteers. They have to do a sailing of 2 to 7 nights. So they've got a wide range of what they can do in terms of an itinerary. They have to stop in a port to actually show that they can go into a port, and then they could follow any protocol that was needed at the port if a break, an outbreak happened on the ship. So they have to prove that they can go through all of these hoops. On board, they have to show that if there's an outbreak on board, how they're going to contain it, how they're going to return people to home so we don't have another situation like the Diamond Princess that we all heard about. They want to make sure that every single ship knows how to handle these things so there's not a cruise ship out there for 42 days with a whole bunch of sick people on it. That's what they're doing. So if they go through these test cruises and then they pass the test, then the CDC will give them the conditional waiver without having to have that high level of vaccination. So those are the two paths. The fast path, all vaccinated. The slow path, a certain percentage.
So Becky, because the Disney cruise, I'm sure arguably would have way more than 2% of kids who are under vaccination age. They would go to the second path. I guess we'd have to figure out if that would make it more dangerous to, you know, to cruise on a Disney cruise.
Here's another thing too, is it, with everything else, things are changing really, really fast, right? Mm-hmm. And even today we heard that the CDC thinks that by summer, we're going to be pretty okay and things should be able to open up. And by September, Broadway's going to open up. So it's very possible that Disney Cruise Line could do one of two things. They could say, you know what, let's go, if they were smart, I'm going to say something very controversial, so, you know, don't write me letters. If they were smart, they would just start cruising and maybe do that 98% vaccination and say, you know what, 12 and over, families with kids of 12 and over are welcome to sail the first month, so that they could get back in the water and start cruising quickly and not have to, you
work
know,
on the protocols and
correct like that, yeah. And work out through the testing. That would be a really smart way to go, because in a month or 2 months after they start sailing, this not might not be an issue. Now, also remember, even though they say they can start sailing in July, it doesn't mean they will, because they have to restaff the ships. They have to work out all the protocols with all the ports that they're going to stop in. There's a lot of things that they need to do to get a ship back up and sailing at full capacity, or at even 50% capacity, or to sail at all. A great example of that is that many of the cruise lines use a huge amount of crew from India. And with what's going on in India right now, they can't bring any of those crew members here to staff the ships. So it really could be that while there's these two paths to go, if the cruise line isn't ready or don't already have the staff here, it might be another 2, 3, 4 months before they can actually start sailing revenue cruises. There's still a lot to do.
So my August cruise could still be on the chopping
It still
block.
Could.
Yeah. Oh, interesting. So the ports of call also, I mean, I would love to have a Disney cruise where I didn't really even go to any ports of call. Just as at sea every day or Castaway Key, you know.
Yeah.
So it'll be really, really interesting. Hmm.
Yeah, so there's, again, a lot's up in the air, but the great news is we've been waiting for the rules and regulations that a ship could return to revenue sailings out of the United States. We've been waiting for this since last October, and to finally get it means that people can start at least moving forward and getting their vacations going again and not have to go through another year of cancellations and, you know, miss dreams.
So first off, Becky, this has been an unbelievable amount of information, and we love you for coming on and giving us all this information. I have a question, and this is, you know, knowing Disney the way you and I and everybody does, there may not be an answer, but it was very interesting that earlier in this year, we heard from the Disney Cruise Line, and they talked about the various ships and cruises that were canceled. They did not go past a certain date, and they basically talked about the Magic, and I believe they talked about the Dream. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if they talked about the Fantasy. They might have with certain destinations, but they kind of stopped in June or July, I forget exactly. So my question is, do you have any idea if they have some type of a lead time which they would require in order to determine whether or not a specific cruise was going to take off? Do they need to talk to their suppliers? Do they need to talk to their crew? Do they need to talk to the guests in order to have ample time to either cancel or go with the cruise? Do you have any insight on that?
That is like the million-dollar question, because every cruise line has handled that differently. And Disney has actually been one of the ones to wait the longest before they decide to cancel a month. And they're doing it a month at a time. So I want to say at this point, it depends on what ship it is, but clearly they've canceled their European sailings, except for the ones that are going from the UK, that are only for the UK residents. So pretty much all of those are gone. They are trying to hold on to certain ones, hoping that maybe those will go. But unfortunately, there just isn't a pattern to it, for the exception of one day they just decide to cancel stuff 30 days out, and then the next 30 days and the next 30 days. So I'm hoping that this new path will allow for them to not have to cancel the next 30 days. Maybe they'll take that ship and turn that into the test cruising, or maybe they'll take that ship and turn it into the 12 and over. So we just have to wait and see what they feel comfortable doing. Many of the cruise lines were also holding out hope to salvage the Alaska season. Some are still have not canceled their entire Alaska season because they're hoping that that'll still go. It just will all depend on how quickly they can test cruise and how quickly they can get up to speed if they're going to take the path of least resistance.
Well, I'm going to do one lightning round question for the three of you. I think Mike and Michelle have sort of gotten this question, but so I'll give it to Michelle first. Do you think the Disney parks will require a vaccination card for entry at any point?
No.
Mike?
They should, but they won't.
And Becky?
I agree. They should, but they won't.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I think that's going to do it for us today. Becky, when you're done with your trip, will you come back and visit us and talk about your experiences at the parks?
Absolutely. Plus, we have another little thing that I want to mention really quickly. The Disney Wish.
Yes. Book me. Book me on it.
I know. See, Chris doesn't think of this stuff because he's like, cruises
already,
are all over there.
I already told my MEI Mouse Fan Travel agent. Book me.
I can just mention something really quick on this because it's brand new and it's something they've never done before. They have split out Platinum. So when it opens up, or they're telling everybody that it's going to open up on May 27th, that's to the general public. So it used to be they would do platinum one day, gold one day, silver another day for the Castaway Club, for those who aren't aware. But instead, they have now split out the platinum itself into four different days.
Yeah.
So if you are, if you have cruises of 25 or more cruises with Disney, you get your first crack at it on May 17th. It's a very small percentage of people that have that many cruises, but it's enough to fill the phone lines when you have something like the Disney Wish coming on. Yeah. If you have 20 or more, May 18th. If you have 15 or more, May 19th. If you have 10 or more, May 20th. If you're gold, then it's May 24th. If you're DVC or an insider from ABD, that's the 25th. If you're silver, May 26th, and everybody else May 27th. So there's a long time, and everybody's gunning for that maiden voyage, and everybody's, it's going to be priced accordingly. So just know that if you really want to get on the maiden or get the wish at the lowest possible price, please contact MEI, your Mousebound travel agent, and get on their list so we can grab the price, because prices will never be lower than the day the booking opens for you.
Wow.
Oh, and can you guys book DVC?
If you're using points, no, clearly. But if you're a DVC member, we might be able to give them their number. But most people who are DVC are probably going to get in gold, yeah, which is which opens up before DVC opens anyway.
That's what I am. All right. Fingers crossed.
Yep. And if
you
want to check. Yeah, exactly. And if you want to check the number, they say it's available on DisneyCruise.com under the Castaway Club. I haven't been able to find mine. I actually had to chat with the people to ask them because I wasn't sure what mine was. It was 41, so I'm on the first day.
41, you'll be driving the boat.
No, there's people with many, many, many more than I do. But my travel agent ones never count. So I'm definitely over that. But those are the revenue cruises that I've gotten up there. But I had to chat with them to ask because I wasn't sure. So if you need to check, do it now, do it beforehand, because when it starts up, online booking's not going to be available for the first few days. It's all going to be phone. And if you're not sure and you try to call, the phone lines are going to be jammed. So check now and get prepared with the information so you know when your window's going to open up.
Wow. It must have been a bad connection because all I heard was Charlie Brown's teacher for the last 10 minutes. I don't know what's going on here.
That we're coming for you with that blow dart, man.
Yeah, and I'm gonna be like B.A. Baracus. I'm gonna get passed out and I'll be on a cruise before I know it. Well, as everyone can tell, it's really important, especially in these days, to have a good travel. What do you guys travel agent?
It's actually travel advisor now.
Travel advisor.
Or vacation
travel
advisor.
Travel goddess. Travel goddess.
I'll take it. I'll answer to anything as long as you want to book something, you know?
Well, I will say.
Travel superhero. How about superhero?
I like that too.
And I will say that works the too. Best of all are the folks at Mousefan Travel. Go there, mousefantravel.com, and they'll give you some quotes and really take good care of you. I can't give you guys enough credit for the great trips that I've gone on. So I highly recommend them. And the people I've recommended your company to have always come back to me and appreciated the recommendation. So
thank you. And if you are interested in the wish, you can put in a quote now, a request for it now, and we will quote you on it the day that your window opens up.
I wish that we didn't talk about cruises. All right. So that's going to wrap it up for this episode.
No. One more thing.
No. Oh, okay. Fine. Fine.
This
let's just
like
let
a,
it all
this
go.
Is like an apple.
Bring it on.
So I will share this with Chris, and I will share a bit of information with Chris and Becky and Michelle after we sign off. But I will let everyone who's listening know that today is May 6th and tomorrow is Friday, May 7th, if you're keeping score at home. May and I would recommend that everybody go to the Disney Parks blog tomorrow. Something will be posted tomorrow. And I think a lot of people will be interested in the little teaser that's going to come. I happen to have a little bit of information on what's going to be posted, but I don't want to spill it here. But I would just recommend that if you're listening to this on a Friday, on Friday, May 7th or later.
Well, this is coming out tomorrow. It's coming out May 7th.
Yeah,
so
yeah, go over to the Disney Parks blog because there may be something there that's going to make you smile and maybe say, oh, wow, it's been a long time since ... Well, and I'll leave it at that.
Intriguing.
What a tease. All right. Well, if you want to continue this conversation, please join us on our Facebook page at Mickey Miles Podcast or on Twitter at Mickey Miles Pod. For Dr. Michelle Scribner-McLean, Mike Scopa, and the ever lovely Becky Menken of Mouse Fan Travel, I'm Chris Eliopoulos. We'll see you on the road, in the parks, and welcome home, Becky.
Thank you. So excited.
We hope you enjoyed listening to today's episode of the Mickey Miles and More podcast. For all of us here at the Mickey Miles and More podcast, this is Rick Gregg saying thanks for listening and all your support. And until next time, we'll see you on the road.